Well, so welcome to our session on managing Office Communications Server 2007. No, I'm kidding. It was 8 years
R2.
Ago. Right? R2. R2. Last one. So we're going to talk today about managing Skype for Business Server. And by the term manage, we don't actually mean in terms of like operations and support of it. But what we wanted to do was give you a sense of when you're still managing Skype for Business Server, what are the things that you need to be thinking about into the future around your potential, you know, trip to the cloud, as well as some of the new features that have come out. So that's kind of the two main parts that we're going to cover off in this session. So if you're in the wrong room and you wanted to hear about something else, now would be the time to leave, because those doors are going to close and you cannot leave until the session is over. Kidding. You can go if you want.
Or in case of emergency.
My name is Scott Stubberfield. I'm a program manager at Microsoft in the Skype for Business product engineering group. Been at Microsoft 10, 11 plus years, and I am Canadian. Do we have any other Canadians in the room? I know there's some. I saw Ken. Oh, hey, that's a good. Yeah, we got a lot more Canadians. Our one Canadian left, and he never came back. So why did we send him over to that room? We lost him.
He's Canadian. He got lost.
It's true.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So I'm Brian Nice. I am also a program manager in our Skype for Business product group. I've been at Microsoft a little over 5 years, been doing architect and fun stuff work for like 15, 20 years. I am an American. I'm from California. So I'm really digging all the water here because we don't have a lot of that where I live. So.
But he likes Canada.
Yes,
and so if you have any really hard questions, can you please address them to Brian? Because I work for Brian now, so if you ask me a really hard question, I can't answer it. That's not going to be good for me at the end of the year.
It'll work out well for me, though.
Might work out well for you.
Yes. Don't even ask how titles work here.
Yeah, we don't have enough time to explain that. So the two things we wanted to, the key objectives here, we're going to talk about how to connect your on-premises infrastructure, your voice infrastructure, to Skype for Business Online. That's that part that I'm talking about, how you're going to leverage that existing Skype for Business on-prem investment that you have, or maybe feature set that you have out there, and how you're going to connect that, you know, the voice pieces of that. And then we will also talk about some of the latest cumulative updates that we have. The deck does reference them as CU1, CU2, CU3. The terminology you see when we publicly release them is the July 2016 update for Skype for Business Server 2015. I just call it CU3, right? We won't actually formally, outside this room, call it CU3, but that's where that terminology comes from. All right, so why do we want to paint this picture? Because this is the guy, right? This is Satya Nadella. He leads Microsoft. And this is his kind of marching orders for the entire company. So our strategy is to build best-in-class platforms and productivity services for a mobile-first, cloud-first world, which seems to not match with the fact that we're talking about an on-premise product, right? And so why I wanted to paint this picture for you is, personally, I feel, and I haven't talked to Satya about this because we don't have regular one-on-ones, but I feel that even with Skype for Business Server, we can set your customers, or you if you are a customer or a partner, we can still set you up to fit this mold in this mobile-first, cloud-first world. It's just that there's a progression to get you from on-premise today to the cloud. And that's really what we want you to take away from this session in terms of what does that progression look like and what could I be doing with my on-premises deployment today to get to that, you know, kind of cloud deployment. So what we're calling this is the Skype for Business Server is the foundation of cloud deployments. Okay, so you can't, in most customers, you're not going to have one without the other, right? How many people out there work with a customer who are greenfield Skype for Business Online? Okay, no hands, right? Which is not surprising. We get that a lot in the customers that Brian and I work with on the team that we're on. Most customers that we go into have some form of on-prem footprint. Even if it's not Skype for Business on-prem, it's a PBX. It's an Avaya PBX. It's a Nortel PBX. It's a Cisco PBX or something. There's some form of an on-premises component that we need to integrate with.
Yeah, so you know, when we look at the path to the cloud, right, one of the interesting things that we like to talk about is the fact that we want to be able to provide the opportunity to you to have the cloud on your terms. Right now, obviously, inside of the Microsoft ecosystem, cloud first, mobile first, right, that's the mantra that we're going with. But in the real world, right? We understand that folks can't just, you know, flip the switch and, hey, on Friday we went home, we were on premises. On Monday we came back, we were in the cloud. Doesn't quite work that way. As much as we would like it to work that way, it doesn't quite work that way, right? So we want to be able to provide a path to the cloud that allows you to have the cloud on your terms, right? Now, obviously you see on the right-hand side with cloud, that's the end game, right, that we're targeting for. Now, again, that's ideal for most, but not all customers, right? There are some customers that just due to regulatory requirements or what have you may never get to the cloud, but that's our intent to get there, right? And your starting point, what you see on the left, is the on-premises world, which we all know and love today, right? I have my servers deployed on-premises. I have a feature set that I can provide on-premises. And I want to be able to continue to leverage that, and we at Microsoft want to be able to continue to improve upon that and evolve that. But that middle layer that we have, the hybrid layer, that's building the bridge to allow you to start approaching the cloud on your terms, right? Being able to start dabbling in what we call split domain, right, where you can actually share the SIP domain across your on-premises deployment and your online tenant. Now giving you that freedom to maybe select a small portion of your organization, right, the particular personas that make sense, and move them into the cloud, right? Allowing them to operate in the cloud, but yet still communicate with the folks that are on premises. And to an end user, they don't notice, right? Nothing looks different to them from that perspective, right? So that's what we look at in this overall path. And what we're going to talk about throughout the rest of the session is partially what are some of the pieces that we plug into this path, but then more importantly, well, hey, what about the on-premises world itself? Right? Is it gone? Is it going away? Is the innovation not happening there anymore? Or are we adding things? And if we are adding things, what are we adding and what have we brought forth in the last round of cumulative updates? Yeah.
So to answer the question, why hybrid? Why do we feel that hybrid is super important? Number one, hybrid sets you up, prepares you for future growth. Okay? The more that you can work with your users on-prem, get them using the product, get their clients updated to the latest client releases. None of that matters whether they're connected to an on-prem deployment or they're connected to an online deployment, right? If you're running the latest Skype for Business 2016 click to run first release channel and you've got that deployed across your environment, I don't care if you're on-prem or you're online, right? This is helping you prepare for that future cloud growth. And then second is, you know, why hybrid? Because you've got existing assets. I touched on this before. Maybe you've got an existing pool that you deployed a year ago or a year and a half ago, and you want to continue to use that. Maybe you've got an existing PBX on-prem that you want to continue to leverage when you move users to cloud PBX. Maybe you're not ready to take the jump to go to cloud PBX plus PSTN calling from Microsoft. So continue to leverage those assets. Perhaps you have a carrier contract into your existing PBX, or maybe you have a SIP trunk contract that you're tied into for another year and a half, 2 years. Again, another reason why it would be important to keep that hybrid deployment up and running. And then last one, which I actually think is probably one of the most important ones here, is generating quality active usage today translates into quality active usage in online, okay? It's super important for us at Microsoft that we get this quality active usage. Because what happens if you buy licenses and you don't get good quality active usage? Guess what? Next time those licenses come up for renewal, we're not really using that, the product doesn't really work well, et cetera, et cetera. So we want to make sure that you get that quality active usage before you go and take that big leap to online. So there's a couple analogies that people use. I have this one in my head. In my house, I have a Wi-Fi network, I have wireless router, I have, you know, different endpoints, phones, computers, and whatnot, and it's all tied to an internet source. I'm also, at the same time, looking at changing my internet provider because there's a new one that's coming to town, it's cheaper, it's whatever. When I change that internet provider from the old standard telco to this kind of new player in town, I don't have to change anything on the inside of my house because that's been set up for a while. It's tested. I know it works. It's functioning. I have good quality active usage within my house. All I'm literally doing is changing where my internet is coming from. And that's what we think about when we think about this shift from an on-prem world to an online world, that you're just literally, you know, if you think of like a water company, right? Instead of getting water from a well, now I'm getting water from, you know, a main company. And so that kind of internal activity in your environment, client updates like I talked about, actually people using it, people adopting it, you know, making sure that it just sticks within your organization. That can happen whether you're on-prem or online.
Yeah, it's an impressive analogy. I wasn't aware they had internet in Canada. So,
carrier pigeons.
Yes, carrier pigeons. Yes, feed them well. So, when we talk specifically about voice-related options, there's a couple of things to think through from a terminology and from an architectural perspective, and that's kind of what we're showcasing here on this slide. Right on the left, you have the pure online environment. Right, I'll just mention it in passing here, just for completeness, but we're not going to talk about this in detail here today. But basically, that is, you've now moved into Office 365, and you are consuming PSTN, right, public switched telephony network. You are consuming PSTN services from Microsoft as your carrier. Right, so you've either gotten new numbers from us, you've ported your existing numbers over to us, we are your telephony provider, right? That's the online world that you see on the left there. On the right is what I'm sure most of you are very familiar with today, which is what we call the on-premises enterprise voice services, right? That's where we basically have the server infrastructure deployed, that's where we do all the fun nuggets of dial plans and usages and routes and trunks and, you know, interconnecting to whatever we want that's on that UCOIP program that we have, right? Connect to a gateway, an SBC, a PBX, what have you. That's the idea of what we have in the on-premises world. In the middle, right, this is where we want to focus our efforts on, right? Because this is part of that story to get you to the cloud on your terms, right? And that's what we call hybrid. Hybrid is one of those words. It's like sight. It's a word that we overuse a lot in the Microsoft vernacular, unfortunately. But really what we mean here by hybrid is the user themselves are actually hosted in the cloud, right? So when you've set up this hybrid environment, from a voice perspective, you have an opportunity to host the user in the cloud, but provide PSTN interconnects from your on-premises deployment, right? That's this idea of hybrid in the guides of PSTN calling, right, or voice interconnects, right? Giving us that capability of leveraging the investments, as Scott talked about earlier. Hey, I just signed a 5-year agreement with Verizon. Not getting out of that anytime soon. Funny thing is that actually happened to us in corporate. We had just signed an agreement at Corp for, you know, I don't know, 5 years or something with a telco provider, and then a couple months later we announced the PSTN calling service, so it was entertaining. But I mean, you get in that situation, well, I'm not going to get out of that telco contract. Okay, we'll continue to use it. Right, I have an on-premises Skype for Business infrastructure, continue to use it, right? Get the user moved into the cloud to consume those cloud services, but leverage the existing investments that we already have. Uh-oh, we're being asked to leave already?
Keep going.
Cool, you got the clicker? Thank you. Sweet. You've been made redundant. It was that Canada comment, wasn't it? Jeez. So when we look at, and again, for those of you that know Microsoft, you know that our naming convention of things is rather interesting. We like short abbreviated names, right? Yeah, no. Cloud PBX with on-premises PSTN connectivity. Yeah, doesn't kind of roll off the tongue there, but that's what it is, right? On-premises PSTN connectivity is that hybrid scenario that we talked about in the last slide. So my user lives in the cloud, but I connect them to the infrastructure of the PSTN through on-premises. Well, why is that good? Because I can take advantage of what I already have. Whether it's an existing carrier contract, a PBX, a gateway, whatever I've already invested money in, right? And maybe it hasn't depreciated yet, so I can't just toss it out. I've got to continue to leverage it, got to continue to use it. Great. I can do that with this on-premises PSTN connectivity option. And it is just as simple as, once we get the hybrid topology in place, migrating users to the cloud, right? Moving users from on-prem to online is just like moving users from one pool to the next in an on-premises deployment. All right, make it that simple. Preserve whatever customizations you have in your server deployments, right? By moving the user to the cloud, you're not changing what you've done with your on-premises deployment. So for the users that remain on-premises, it's business as usual for them, right? For the users that are capable of being moved into the cloud, well, now they're able to take advantages of the cloud PBX services, and yet they still use those underlying back-end services that you already have. Obviously, over time, as you start to sift through this, you can significantly reduce that hardware footprint, right? As more and more folks get moved online, Maybe you don't have to have a couple of pools that have 12 front-end servers in them, right? Maybe they can get scaled down to smaller sizes because the number of users that are actually depending on conferencing services and things of that nature just aren't there anymore, right? They're being moved up into the cloud environment. But obviously, at the end of all of this, you have to make that determination of what makes sense for me as a customer, for me as a partner, for my customers. And that's where, you know, earlier this week, we talked about the Skype operations framework. And one of the pieces that we released in there was called cloud migration, right? And one of the areas that we go through in the cloud migration release is this concept of personas, right? And helping to understand persona mappings that you do in your org and how we can tie that to this migration aspect, right? Because there are some users in your org that maybe the cloud's not ready for them yet, right? Because there's a feature set that they need or there's a base set of functionality that's just not there. Well, we want to give you the opportunity to be able to continue to leverage the on-premises infrastructure to do that. So here's a handy-dandy chart in nice Ignite orange that tells us a little bit about the different ways that we can connect to the PSTN in this hybrid world. Now, I want to call your attention to the big black line that you see kind of almost in the middle there. I'm going to talk about everything to the left of that right now, because that's here, clear, present, ready, available, right? The stuff to the right, get to in just a second. So first and foremost, put this in context, right? The context of this slide is on-premises PSTN connectivity. So I have my user homed in the cloud, but I want them to consume PSTN services from my organization's on-premises environment. Now, one of the easiest way to do that is, number one, your existing pools, right? If you already have Enterprise Voice deployed today, you already have all the plumbing that you need, right? You've developed your voice policies, your PSTN usages, your routes. You've done all of that homework to be able to figure out class of service, class of restriction. You've done all of the bells and whistles that you need for on-premises. Well, when you move them to online, we simply take that same logic, put it into a hybrid voice routing policy, and boom, assign it to the user. Done. I don't have any extra heavy lifting that I need to do to get that cloud user to leverage the environment that I've already built. Now, of course, that requires you to set up split domain or what we call hybrid, right, to get that topology in play. Once that's there, you're ready to roll, right? Now, of course, you could deploy new pools as necessary, right? Perhaps you have a pool that's deployed today that's servicing users in a particular region, and now you want to be able to spin up users, say, over in Europe, and we want to be able to do a PSTN connectivity option for them over there. Well, I could just spin up another pool in that region if I needed to, right, to be able to provide that PSTN interconnect. That may or may not be, you know, a great strategy, because again, the end goal here is to try and reduce that hardware footprint. But, you know, we're laying out all the various options that you have. That's definitely one of the options that you can go through. The third option is our friend Cloud Connector, right? How many of you have played with or heard about or looked at Cloud Connector? Cool. Sweet. These are the interactive parts, right? If you don't answer, then Scott's going to make you get back up again and do something else goofy. So, the Cloud Connector edition is meant to be deployed in an environment that doesn't have any on-premises deployment today, right? So if you already have Skype for Business Server deployed or Link 2010 or 2013 deployed, Cloud Connector is not for you yet, right? Because we don't have a way to do coexistence for that. But the idea of Cloud Connector is a packaged set of VMs that get placed on a Hyper-V host, and that basically has just the bare minimum bits that we need to provide the PSTN connectivity. Right? You can't home users on Cloud Connector. That's not what its intent is. Its intent is literally a device that will allow us, or an appliance that will allow us, to interconnect to the PSTN, and that's it. Right? Straight, simple. Now, the two options that you see on the right are the evolution of the Cloud Connector edition. Right? As it stands today, Cloud Connector is a set of packaged VMs. Right? So you provide the hardware. You provide the hypervisor, right, which is Hyper-V. And then you go out and download the Cloud Connector edition. And we go ahead and, through automation, we build everything that's needed to run Cloud Connector. And you deploy multiple for HA and all that fun stuff, right? The idea with the two on the right is the evolution of that, making it become more of a sealed appliance, right? So rather than, oh, I buy the hardware and then have to run this script and get it all configured, I just buy this SKU and it shows up. right? And it's a box that's a little, you know, 1U rack mount appliance, and I just stick it in and plug it in and power it on and I'm done, right? That's the evolution of Cloud Connector. And that's the two options that you see on the right, right? One that could be, you know, partner driven, and one that's more of a sealed, you know, Cloud Connector appliance. Those are future thinking items, but, you know, something to be aware of when you kind of look at how we do this interconnect to the PSTN.
Okay, so a couple things to take away from that. So as Brian mentioned, we're not going to go into all the details on the call routes and call flows and signaling and things like that. There are some additional details in the slides in the appendix of this deck, so you can go back and download the deck after, and there are a few more details there. But there are other sessions that cover that off. There's some really good trainings that we've produced as part of the Scape Operations Framework that go into, you know, the planning and the envisioning of all these different options, so you can go and learn more there. Couple key things that we do want you to take away from and kind of summarize what we just talked about. So moving to the cloud obviously is the strategic goal. It's the strategic goal for Microsoft, and we feel it's the right strategic goal for your customers to get them there eventually. And we realize that there are always a number of different situations and issues why they can't get there. Some of them are features, some of them are country, some of them are functionality, whatever. But that's the strategic goal, to get to the cloud as much as we can. So to do that, one of our recommendations is port numbers to our service where possible, right? So if you have numbers that aren't under some sort of long-term contract, let's get them. If you're in a country that has cloud PBX with PSTN calling, let's get those numbers ported to our service as quickly as possible. The administrative flexibility that you gain by moving those numbers over there is super, right? You take 100 numbers that are in your on-prem that, you know, require a lot of difficult changes and things, you move those, port those over to the service. Now you take advantage of all PowerShell commandlets, the admin center controls that you have for, you know, changing those numbers, assigning them to users, moving them around if you need to. It's a huge advantage to get them there. Leverage your existing deployments, and we talked about what some of the reasons are for those. If you have no existing on-prem Link or Scape for Business deployment today, but you have on-premises telephony components that you want to connect to, Cloud Connector is your avenue. And then we've also seen where PSTN-only customers can see big savings and make a lot of traction in a hurry. So let's say your ultimate goal is to move, you know, to Cloud PBX and PSTN calling. Well, in order to do that, you need to make sure that users are using certified devices, that your networks are stable, that you have enough bandwidth between all your locations. You can basically do all that and still prove it out using PSTN conferencing, which is available in much more countries than straight PSTN calling today. So don't look at it and think, oh, well, you know, PSTN calling isn't available, so I can't do anything. Well, no, you can. You can move PSTN conferencing, or what we call cloud PSTN conferencing, you can move to that and then still leverage one of those other on-premises PSTN connectivity options that Brian touched about. All right, so now is when we're gonna kind of switch gears and talk about some of the cumulative updates and some of the investments that we're continuing to make in the on-premises product. Because as Brian mentioned earlier, we do get a question a lot, well, is the on-premises server product dead? No, it's not dead. Cloud is our focus, but we're still continuing to make investments in the on-prem product.
Yeah, and from a CU perspective, again, kind of as Scott pointed out, for the purposes of this deck, we're going to refer to things like CU1, CU2, CU3. That's really just for us to be able to kind of put things into the right buckets for you. But when you see them released in the wild, it's always got a date associated with it, right? The July 2016 cumulative update. It's also important to note, too, that, you know, when you go out to the sites to download the CUs, you can only ever download the latest CU. Right. Yet another reason why we typically don't refer to CU1, 2, 3 is because if you look at me and go, hey, CU3 looks neat, but nah, I just want CU2. Yeah, good luck finding it. Because you're not, right? Unless you back end through service, through support or what have you, you're not going to find that on the public download sites. Because when we say cumulative update, we mean
cumulative,
right? Everything, right? So let's look at very quickly a snapshot of what we did in the first two CUs, and then we'll spend some more time focusing on the most recent
update. For time reference is roughly July 2015 to July 2016-ish.
Yes, correct.
Roughly.
So one of the first things that we added was the concept of shared line appearance. How many of you have used shared line appearance? How many of you know what shared line appearance is? Okay, that's a start. That's better. It's important to note, too, because everybody has a slightly different definition of what shared line appearance is, right? So in one of our first CUs, we added in this ability to do shared line appearance, where I can have, you know, multiple physical handsets have that same number show up across, you know, multiple handsets. So I can have that one DID that's actually shared across, you know, five physical phones, for example. Right, that's our concept of shared line appearance, and it was introduced in one of our first CUs that we did for Skype for Business Server. It also functions specifically with the VVX line of handsets from Polycom. This is a feature that, and a lot of times you will see the mantra is basically we innovate in the cloud first, and then we bring it to on-premises second. Yeah, this is one of the ones that we brought to on-premises first. Right, you don't have shared line appearance as an available option yet through Cloud PBX. We had some RGS issues fixed, a few perf issues, right? There's performance issues. It's kind of the main moniker that comes with RGS, or Response Group Services is what RGS stands for. In the on-premises world, we've made some leaps and bounds on how they've built and scaled and things of that nature around RGS that were added into these various CUs. We also added this concept of group call pickup. From a commandlet's perspective, right, rather than having to use the CIFA util, right, which was a resource kit commandlet that we had to run, and if you've ever had to set that up, it's generally not entertaining to set up. So we built a lot of that into the PowerShell commandlets now. Group call pickup, for those of you that don't know, right, is meant to be used in a setting where, you know, your team is basically sitting in that same physical area. Right, and a call can come into the group line and it rings all of the members that are of that group, and anybody has the ability to pick that particular call up. We tweaked the commandlets to include a server patch version commandlet that actually lets you see the patch version of the various components. Yay. Some of these you just kind of look at and go, wow, really? Well, yeah, wow, really. It took us a little bit, but we got that one in there. And then probably the one that's the most fun to talk about on this is the ability to set up what we call pinless PSTN conferencing activation, right? A very common request that we saw from customers, one that I worked with directly, was, hey, I need to be able to start a meeting, and I'm dialing into the meeting from my phone, right? I'm not using a Skype client. I'm not using any kind of mobile client. I'm actually dialing in. And when I go to dial in, if I want to unlock that meeting, what do I have to do? Well, I have to sign in, right? What's your conference ID? What's your leader pin? How many buttons do I need? And I just crashed my car, right? So I just need to be able to start the meeting, right? Well, we entered this idea of this pinless PSTN conference activation, right? Being able to turn this feature on and say, okay, you can activate the conference without requiring a pin to be entered for the conference itself. That probably creates a pretty interesting situation, huh?
It does create some interesting situations, yeah. So basically, it's like an open bridge that anyone, if they got the number and the conference ID, they would be in. So use that power wisely if it's something that you're going to deploy with your customers. Make sure that they're aware of the fact that you're making that change, and make sure that you've talked through all of the potential ramifications of that. And we'll leave it at that.
Definitely fun stuff. All right. So that was kind of the CU1, CU2 stuff. Quick little recap, quick little overview of that. Let's talk about the most recent stuff that was added in the CU3 side of the house. So the first one that we're going to look at is the idea of busy options. This is a feature that's been requested for a very long time, from what I remember, right? Which is basically the ability to say, like most phone systems, right? Hey, I'm busy. So when somebody calls me and I'm busy, I'm busy. I don't want somebody to interrupt me with another phone call. Right? Now, obviously, before this, you could do things like do not disturb. Right? I could set my presence to DND, and then if somebody called me, they would just get routed to my voicemail directly. Yeah, fantastic. If I remember to set my presence to DND. The idea of busy on busy, right? You can turn on busy options for the organization. And then you have the ability for both enterprise voice and non-enterprise voice users to be able to turn on options that you see in the little chart here. One, the name, as it would imply, busy on busy. Right? You call me, I'm already on a call. That means my presence is busy. You're going to get a busy signal. Call back later. Right? The other option you can set is voicemail on busy, which is kind of that same net effect that you get if you're DND. Right? You call me, and I'm busy, and I redirect you to my voicemail rather than redirecting you to a busy tone or a busy signal that gets played. Now, a couple little notes we added here. One, regardless of how these busy options are configured, right, users in a call or a conference or those with the call on hold are not prevented from initiating a new call, right? So if I have this option set and I'm in a conference and I go, man, this dude's putting me to sleep, I got to go make another call, I can do that, right? I can break out of that and go make another call for my client, that's fine, right? This doesn't impact my ability to make an outbound call, right? So it's not like when busy on busy is set, when I'm busy, I can't do anything. It just has to do with the calls that come inbound, right? Now, there is a little feature that we have that we mentioned at the bottom that you can't set the busy option action type voicemail on busy if the user's mailbox is in Exchange Online. There's actually a KB article here, and I probably should have clicked that before we got in here to see if they resolved it. But as of the time that at least we put the deck together, this was still an open item, right? The workaround was set the policy while the Exchange mailbox is on premises first, and then move the mailbox to the cloud, and then it works. But if the mailbox is already in the cloud, setting voicemail on busy doesn't work, right? And there is work ongoing to fix that. It just didn't make it into the CU. So some considerations for this. They're admin commandlets, right? So if you're allergic to PowerShell, you're probably not going to configure busy options. Okay? There are no UI controls in the Skype for Business client. So the user doesn't have the option to say, I would like this to be busy on busy versus voicemail on busy. Right? The admin sets this for the user. There is also no forward on busy, right? As you saw on the previous slide. It's either you get a busy tone or you end up in my voicemail. I can't say, oh, well, if I'm busy, forward those calls to Scott. I don't have a forward on busy yet. Team call, boss admin, RGS calls, those will all be prioritized and handled as they are today in the response group world or the delegation world. Now, what does it mean to be busy? Right? We put a little list here of what does that mean when we say busy on busy? Well, what is the definition of busy? Well, there it is. You're in an active call. You have the call on hold. You're in a conference call. You are in the process of making an outbound call, or you're already receiving an incoming call that you have not yet picked up. All of those scenarios result in you being considered busy for the purposes of configuring busy options, and then we'll take action as appropriate.
And again, I think, you know, this feature, keep in mind, this feature is not necessarily for everybody, right? What you're seeing in some of the features that we've deployed in these CUs is that they're very specific features that were requested by certain customers, very high profile and important customers, that we went out and said, we're going to unblock your deployment by developing these features for you.
Yeah, spot on. I personally could go without hearing a busy signal for the rest of my life. Yes?
What are the default options?
It's not enabled by default.
So his question was, what are the default options?
Sorry, thank you. Yeah.
The question was, what are the default options when you install CU3? And Brian's answer is correct. It's just not on, right?
So yep.
It's not like you have to plan for it all of a sudden when you deploy CU3.
Yep.
We do have a slide that shows the configuration.
Yes, we do, coming up here in just a bit. So when we look at the other voice applications that we have, response groups, team call, boss admin, shared line, call park, conferencing, right? We've documented out on the slide here, and I'm not going to go through every gory detail here, but we've documented out on the slide here for your reference how the busy options integrate and interoperate with these other voice apps. Right, so we kind of gave you a single bullet on the last slide that summed it all up and basically said, well, they're going to respect their own. Well, here's the gory detail of the specific use cases. Right, so I have team call set up. Incoming calls to users who are set up for a team call will be prioritized to ignore busy on busy and voicemail on busy. Right, so I prioritize the team call action and let the team call ring multiple people rather than immediately sending back a busy tone, because that'd be kind of rude. Right, maybe I'm on a call and four of my other people that are in my team are not, well, there's no reason to send that back as a busy signal, right, just because I'm busy. let's let the other four people, if they're available, go ahead and pick up that call. So it's a good slide to have as a reference if you're looking at interoperability with the other voice apps. And from a configuration standpoint, right, we need the July 2016 CU. That would be CU3. Or later, of course, once we release the next CU, it's cumulative, right? So you'll install that one, and you'll have busy options if you haven't installed this as of yet. You need to register the busy options application, right? It is a voice application that we've built on top of the front end. So we've got the new CS Server application commandlet that we go ahead and run. We need to do a quick update of the RBAC roles, and we do have to restart the RTC service. So obviously, if you are planning on using this feature, this is something that you want to think about planning in your environment. This is not something you want to do Monday morning at 8:30 and say, hey, it'd be kind of cool to turn on busy options today. Probably not, right? Because we have to restart the RTC SRV service on the pool. And as y'all know, if any of you know me and you've come to any of my HADR sessions, you know how much fun it is with Windows Fabric when you start messing around with restarting servers in the pool. Right, we should just make like step 12 of that be update your resume, because you might need to do that if you're not following all the steps the right way. You know, at the end of the day, you can actually look in the event viewer and see the application registered. So there you see it as the /LCS/busy options. Yes, it does read LCS. Moving on. That's how we can quickly see that that application is there and registered. And then once we have the app set up, I mean, still, that doesn't really do much of anything other than give us the ability now to turn on busy options for my users. Right? So now I can go in and create a new voice policy or use an existing voice policy if I want, right? Using the set CS voice policy. Busy options enable true, right? If you remember from back in your, you know, your back in the recesses of your brain when we talk about on-premises voice stuff, right? You have the concept of a voice policy. Voice policies on premises control two things. They control what features are enabled, and they control class of service, class of restriction, right, through the usages and routes. This is a feature that you can turn on, right? And remember, you got to turn it on in PowerShell. There's no checkbox in the control panel for us to do this. So we turn busy options on, and then we can grant the voice policy as appropriate to Alice, right, in this case. That basically turns on the busy option feature. The last commandlet here actually says what type of busy option are we setting up for Alice. Is it busy on busy or is it voicemail on busy? So yeah, I mean, you know, to wrap up the busy options piece, this is definitely a very pointed, specific feature that we've had a number of customers ask for. It is not something that I see customers just broadly rolling out because, I mean, again, this is kind of making things behave like an old-fashioned telephone system. Right? I mean, heck, we even have call waiting, you know, where I didn't get a busy signal. And so I don't know that I necessarily would want everybody to have it, but for those customers that absolutely needed it, we listened to that feedback, and eventually we provided access to the feature in the on-premises world. Right? This is another one of those options that it's available in the on-premises world. This is not available in the cloud. So I'll flip over to Scott, and we can talk about some more fun goodies we added into CU3.
Yes. So the next big, I would say that probably the biggest feature that landed in CU3 for Skype for Business on-premises, video-based screen sharing, or VBSS. I've been around this product for a long time, Skype for Business, Link, Office Communication Server, and I would say that one of the biggest pieces of feedback that we had heard across all the years was, we use screen sharing a lot, and in environments where network isn't great, screen sharing really suffers. Why was that? The reason for that was, previously, in RDP, we used TCP protocol, right? TCP protocol is connection-oriented protocol. If I miss packets, packets show up out of order, everything suffers, right? We don't do that in voice, because the reason is you've already moved on. Right? Plus the brain's able to process, you know, what it's missing. So our previous desktop sharing implementations all relied on RDP. They were all TCP based. So if you were on a network with poor network conditions and you were ever in one of those meetings where someone was trying to show you something on their screen, you'd like, hold on. No, I know you just said you opened command prompt, but I'm still back on Internet Explorer, right? So you could get in these situations where you were a long ways behind where they were. So underlying protocols for VBSS, in the legacy screen sharing perspective, we were using RDP, and the maximum that we could get there was 1.5 frames per second. With VBSS, we can get up to 15 frames per second, right? So there's a couple of advantages there. One on the additional VBSS, you can now use this in an environment where you're running software that's maybe showing a 3D model that's spinning, right? What did that 3D model look like before in RDP?
If you were lucky.
If you were lucky, you'd see, it'd rotate 360 degrees and you'd see it move four times. Right now with VBSS and 15 frames per second, you can actually see that model spin around back and forth. One of the big reasons was for going to VBSS was so that we could improve that frames per second. Second one that I already kind of touched on was around the transport protocol, right? So the fact that in VBSS we've moved to UDP rather than TCP in RDP allows us to function better in environments where network conditions aren't great. Now, we will fall back. So VBSS, what you'll see when we show the SDP of this, we do negotiate both UDP and TCP. So that's one myth that I've heard where people say, no, VBS is only UDP. It's not actually true. We will do UDP and TCP. It's just that we prefer UDP and you'll get a better user experience. Some colleagues of ours, Ricardo and Jason, did a session earlier this week on VBSS, kind of a deeper dive on VBSS. They had a really cool video that shows functionality side by side, RDP versus VBSS. So if you want to kind of see this in action, you can go back and watch their presentation. From a backwards compatibility perspective, we had to bake backward compatibility in out of the box. We couldn't say to the world, hey, guess what? Everyone in the world needs to update to this client release
now,
now, right? Go, right? VBSS is here, everyone go. We couldn't, we knew that, right? This is a multi-stage, multi-year, multi-client approach to getting us to having all our endpoints eventually running VBSS. It's a lot of pain in the short term because as you'll see the slides that come up that talk about all the interoperability scenarios and when we fall back and things like that, there are a lot of really weird situations that we had to account for, but I think it was an investment in pain that it will eventually pay off. So some of the goals of VBSS, we sat down and said, hey, we want to deploy this VBSS thing. We've heard the feedback. These are the goals that we went after. So we want to make screen sharing more reliable compared to RDP from both a speed perspective, but also an initial setup perspective. When you join a conference call and audio and video negotiate, that happens pretty quick, right? You join the call, audio's on, oh, there's video, okay, we're good, we're in the call. Some RDP sessions in the past, 10, 12, 15 seconds sometimes.
Can you see my screen yet?
Can you see my screen? Nope. Can you see my screen?
Nope, there it is.
Okay, I got it now, right? So that was what the second big goal, that we really wanted to improve session startup time. So again, some big goals. And some reasons why we went after this. So as a result of that, there obviously are some pros and cons. So from a pro perspective, yes, we've made it more reliable. We've increased the frames per second. And this is now a screen sharing solution that you can use in environments where you're trying to share video or you're trying to share 3D applications. On the con side, there are certain scenarios where we will actually use more bandwidth than RDP. So an RDP was very bursty. So if you looked at the overall bandwidth that got used, we overall averaged probably less bandwidth than what we would in a VBSS session. However, we feel that the pros far outweigh that con. And then secondly, we have heard some feedback where it's a little blurrier compared to RDP, right? And so you'll join a session with VBSS and maybe the initial second it starts and the screen's kind of blurry and then it kind of catches up. To me, that's the analogy like when you watch Netflix at home, right? You start a movie in Netflix, and the first 2 or 3 seconds is maybe a little blurry as the things equalize, and then boom, there, now we're in a nice, crisp session. So we have sacrificed some of the overall quality of the images that you do see. But again, I feel, and we feel as a team, it's worth it. So why is this important? This is important because maybe in your environment today, you don't have firewalls set up to account for all this stuff. One of the things we've seen with customers is they went and they deployed CU3 and they didn't have UDP ports open, and now they're using VBSS over TCP, and they're saying, hey, this isn't any better than what we had before. Well, it's because they didn't actually open up the UDP ports to get from the clients up to the front-end servers. So you need to make sure that you have that media port range. The TCP port range for signaling hasn't changed. It's just more important on the UDP side. And then same thing on the required client port side. You want to make sure that you've got UDP open up in your firewall. So a couple of network considerations. So we do use an H.264 video codec. So basically, in the client, we've written a custom screen scraper that actually scrapes the screen, embeds it in H.264, sorry, encapsulates it in H.264, and sends it across the wire as if it's a video being sent. Resolution and aspect ratio depends on the sharer's monitor. It's not always going to be 16:9, but that's kind of the standard that we would go to. And then we've got some maximum and minimum payload bit rates. The important thing to remember here is it is still an adaptive codec, right? So just like our audio and video codecs are adaptive based on packet loss, available bandwidth, the VBSS stack leverages that as well. So we will up the bit rate when we have more bandwidth. If the client senses that it has less bandwidth available, it will actually lower the bit rate. So we can't tell you exactly what the bit rate is because it will be variable. Mr. Schertz did some investigation back when this was, I think, was still in preview in 2015,
yep.
And shared some early results. Or actually, maybe that was when we deployed it online. That was probably based on online because it came to online first, and then we backported.
Yeah, it came online first, and it came peer to peer first, and then conferencing when we did the online, and then once we released CU3, that's when we added it to the MCUs here for on premises.
Yeah, so he's got some good information there in terms of some testing that he did and how much bandwidth gets used in certain situations. So, when and where. So the first most important thing, on the client side, Scape for Business clients, 2016 and above. Has to be 2016. This will not work in a 2015 client, even if it's a 2015 client that's running the Scape for Business skin. Okay, so very important that you're in the 16 range. You also need to be at a minimum 16.0.6330 for our click-to-run versions. And then one of our recommendations here is all of these different client channels that we have, deferred channel, current channel, and then first release for deferred channel. We originally, Brian and I debated, we had some versions, some detailed versions up there. We're like, oh, should we say this is the best version for that stuff is changing so dynamically that it's not worth it for us to put versions up there. Just keep in mind that as of this version for click to run and this version for MSI, we will essentially enable video-based screen sharing. You will get the best experience, the most bugs fixed, by staying the latest as you can on any of these click to run channels and also on the MSIs. So again, we could have put some really complicated matrix of, well, you need this version and first release for deferred channel and this for, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Just tell your customers that whatever channel they're on for click to run, stay up to date and get it deployed, because we are constantly fixing client bugs that we find. And it's not that there were things that we should have fixed before, we're just finding different things as, you know, other clients get updated and we run into all these sort of situations. So that's the big takeaway. Stay in the latest builds and you will have the best and greatest VBSS experience. On the server side, this is enabled across every tenant worldwide in Scape for Business Online. And it will also be enabled for tenants running Scape for Business on-premise, CU3, and above. Okay? When do we fall back? Pretty much a lot of the time. that's the way that I summarize this. And I know it gets some laughs, but I did introduce this before, that there is some pain here, right? We had to do a lot of coding in the product to make sure that we seamlessly support this fallback. And if anyone's ever actually seen it in action, it's pretty darn slick, right? And so we talk about in the kind of under the covers bit how we actually make this happen. But just keep in mind that whenever any one of these things happens in a meeting, we will fall back to RDP. And the other important thing is we do not ever fall forward, right? So if someone running a down-level client joins, we fall back to RDP. If they leave, we don't go, hey, we can go back to VBSS, because we don't want things bouncing back and forth. It doesn't make sense, right? So we try VBSS. If it doesn't work, we'll fall back. So a couple things under the covers. So there are some SIP negotiation changes. Anyone here like to look at snooper traces just for fun? Yeah, I know. It's kind of nerdy. I do myself. So one important thing that you'll notice is that it's now a multi-part SDP offer. So we will actually negotiate in that offer for application sharing. We will negotiate RDP, and we will negotiate for VBSS. Why do we do that? Tell me, why do we do it? Why are we negotiating both? Exactly, speed of fallback. What we didn't want to have happen is, oh crap, someone joined that doesn't support VBSS. Let's go back and renegotiate the media. No, we want that to be super, super seamless, okay? So this is essentially like what we do with audio codecs today, right? In audio codecs, we do these multiple negotiations. And I tell people all the time, it's kind of like languages, right? So when Brian and I first meet, we set the standard of, do we speak English and French? Great, let's start speaking French because that's our preferred language. If we can't, we'll fall back to English. But we've already negotiated that up front. So as soon as that conversation in that language of VBSS fails or we need to fail back, boom, RDP kicks right in. On the RTCP channel, we just say, hey, go to RDP. Boom, both endpoints go to RDP, and we're back in RDP, and it's literally seamless into the meeting. So there's none of this like waiting in this weird translation.
And that would fail back really fast for me because I don't speak French.
Your French isn't very good. So just a quick example. So if you are looking in a log file, if you're trying to look at this from a pure client-side perspective, it's really hard to see. It's not like we put a big flashing sign on the desktop share that says, hey, guess what? This is using VBSS. We don't. We just do it. We just share the desktop. If you know what to look for, you can see that kind of gradient view on first join. You'd also be able to tell because of the speed of the join. But the way that you really tell is by looking in a SIP trace, right? So a couple things that you want to look for. Number one, you're going to look for M equals application sharing, right? So that says, hey, I'm doing this negotiation for application sharing. And then you're going to see a line that says M equals video. So if you see an M equals video line paired with an M equals application sharing session, boom, that tells you that that client is negotiating VBSS, right? And so if you're having an issue, then your mind needs to go to, hey, are you running the latest click-to-run release? Are you running an MSI? Are you fully patched, right? Does the issue reproduce if you fall back to RDP? And you can make RDP fall back by doing things like having down-level clients join, or the common one that I see is have someone request control, which forces us to fall back to RDP. Make sense? And so this is one thing here that you'll actually see. When we do that fallback, because we don't want that client to now bounce back and forth and try to go back to VBSS, we actually get a re-invite. Everyone knows what a re-invite is, right? It's just an addition to the original, you know, end invite, where basically we come back and we set this M equals video to 0, which basically says, hey, you know that French negotiation thing we did?
Never mind.
Doesn't work. Never mind. Forget that we even talked about it. We're only speaking English the rest of this call. So those are two ways that you could look in a client-side log file to see whether or not VBSS was in play, number one, and number two, did we actually fall back to RDP? Those are two clues that you could look for.
Yeah, before he jumps off of the slide with that, just for those of you that don't poke around in log files all that much, right, the SDP is the session description protocol, right, which is what actually tells us how we're negotiating audio and video and all the ports we're going to use and all the candidates and all of that good stuff. If you haven't had a chance to dabble in that, you can check out, there's a session on Friday, I think around noonish or so, that the great Thomas Binder is going to be running on media, right? That'll take you all through the clients, and he'll be back, and ICE, and stun and turn, and all that good stuff. So if you hadn't a chance to dig into what the session description protocol is, and you want to know more about that, head to that session on Friday.
Okay, so last two slides. One, if you need to disable VBSS client side, so say you're running a down-level version and you identify, oh yeah, I'm running this version, there's a bug, right? And I don't have time to update that. You can actually just disable using VBSS client side. You could do this in a manual registry file, or you could put this in a GPO and push it out to a bunch of people if you wanted to. 32-bit version of link, 64-bit version of link. Pretty straightforward. This will apply to both peer-to-peer and conferencing. It just disables VBSS altogether. If you wanted to disable it server side, it's set CS conferencing policy, identity, policy name, application sharing mode, RDP. And then you change the media configuration. Those are both on-prem commandlets because this is an on-prem discussion, right? If you wanted to do that for online, we don't support that just yet. So you would need to put the client-side fix in if you wanted to deploy that for online.
Yeah, I think a key point when we look at, you know, we give you the options here that talk about disabling it. Generally speaking, the first, you know, knee-jerk reaction shouldn't be, oh, there's a problem, let me just disable it.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, there's a problem, let me make Microsoft fix what the problem is, right? Because we've actually had instances where a number of customers have run into an issue, and rather than tell us about the issue, they just disabled it. And then a couple weeks later, we get another customer that finds it, and we discover that, wow, that's been happening to lots of other customers, and we could have fixed this a whole lot earlier had we known about it. So definitely, if you find challenges or problems with VBSS, before you reach for that hammer to say, let's turn this thing off, let's see if we can find out what the root cause of it is. It could be driver-related. It could be a bug in the code that we have to fix, right? But that's part of the iterative process, right? We want to get to the root cause of it. We want to fix it, and we want to get it out there. Right, and then kind of as a last resort, or if you have a very specific use case, then you can look at turning it off.
Yeah, repro, collect logs, file support case, done.
And away we go.
Potentially disable it.
Sweet. I really enjoy VBSS. Works pretty well for me. One of the other big areas that we added in to, and this is really more of a client-driven piece, but we included it here for completeness sake. Is this ability to send offline IMs,
right? Which some people call email, but
yeah. I always joke. I call email delayed IMs. It's just that's kind of what it is, right? So it's like SharePoint's a web server. So somebody's going to throw something at me somewhere. So offline IM is pretty much just what it sounds like, right? I open up my Skype for Business client. I have a contact in there for Scott, and I see Scott is listed as offline messages only, right? Because he's actually offline. Which I find kind of weird because he should be online all the time. Come on. But if he's not online, he's actually offline, I can just open his contact up and say, hey, ping me when you get in, right? Or maybe there's a bot that's running that sends some alert right out to people. Well, he's actually going to get that first as an email, right? So yeah, we call it email. He'll get a notification in email that basically reads, you have an offline IM, and here it is. And on his client, he'll actually get a little toast that will pop up. It says, you have an offline IM, right? When he signs in to the Skype for Business client. Now, this is actually driven by the client, and we use Exchange Web Services, or EWS, to deposit it into the user's Exchange mailbox. That's it. It's a pretty nifty feature because, and it's something, again, this is one of those features that we had a lot of folks asking for, and we said, okay, well, let's build it. This is a feature that's getting a lot of traction. Let's put it into play. So in order for this to work, right, there's a minimum client version that we need to have, which I think we've got in the deck, I hope. And then we also need EWS, right, Exchange Web Services. The version of Exchange, I've seen it work with 2010, 2013, 2016, right? We need EWS. I even heard rumor of it working with 2007, but I'm not going to say anything about that. So I ponied up in one of Jason's sessions. Does it work with Exchange 5.5? And I sort of dated myself at that point, so that wasn't a good thing. So, the deployment considerations, there's a lot of a wall of text here, and I'm not going to read it all to you. Basically, what you have to understand is there's a parameter, a policy setting that we have called enable IM auto archiving. That controls the offline IM feature. So if that's turned off, offline IMs aren't going to work, right? Because we have to have that, policy in play. Now, the client actually spools this information, right? So my Skype for Business client, I'm going to send an offline message to Scott. He's obviously not online. He's offline. I spool that message in my local file system and then send that through EWS. And then he receives it as an IM note missed conversation message type, right? So he can actually see it's different than just a traditional email, right? So it looks a little different in the client so it can draw attention to the fact that this is a missed IM. If it happens to be an offline message that's sent through a federated environment, that typically will then show up as a generic email message that you would see in your conversation history type thing. It doesn't have the im.note.missedconversation format to it. Now, we don't take you through all the gory details as far as configuring it. We give you a link to it here, and that's because there's really not all that much to configure. It is client-side driven. We decide to turn the policy on or off, and away you go. Right? It's pretty straightforward. Now, there is a bit of a timer from when an offline message is sent to when it gets picked up and shoved into EWS. Right? So if you're like me and you're kind of impatient and you go and send that message and you go send, did you get it? Did you go, man, it must be broken. Yeah. You got to wait a little bit, right? It takes a couple of minutes for it to be picked up and processed. If you look at this folder, the local app data Microsoft Office 16 link, your SIP address, history spooler, and you see a bunch of email messages in there, something broke with EWS, right? Now your client is actually not able to contact EWS to deposit the messages. So that's a bad scenario, right? You can use the ETL log files contain info about this, and that's typically something you're going to hand off to support engineers or if you're in you know beta programs, BTS folks, things of that nature. So we'll just send it all to Ricardo. It'll be fine, right? So that's typically where we end up with this troubleshooting option that we have for offline IAMs. And kind of last feature we talk about that we added into CU3, I think this is the last feature.
This is the last
feature.
Could
be long. Could be wrong. It's been a long day. Is the concept of multiple emergency numbers. In the Skype for Business enterprise voice world, you guys should know that we have the capability of defining emergency numbers. Right? So I can go in and I can define an emergency number with emergency number masks, right? And then I can actually build dynamic policies so that when I travel, right, and I land in a particular location, if I'm used to dialing 911 and then I travel over into the UK or something and I accidentally dial 911, it can mask that as 112 and away we go. That works really well when you have one number, which, I mean, that's what we do here in the US, right? You dial 911 and away you go. But in other parts of the world that actually apparently do exist outside of Redmond, which is very strange, there are multiple numbers, right? There's a number for fire, there's a number for police, there's different numbers that need to go different ways. Well, in CU3, we added the ability to do multiple emergency numbers for a client. So now I can go in and build policy that allow me to have multiple emergency numbers defined rather than just a single one, right? So now I can support in the UK, I have 999, and I can also support 112. Right, so that allows me to deal well, at least until Brexit comes along. Right, that allows me to deal with at least multiple numbers that I have available in this type of deployment. Also useful in healthcare environments, right, where we have roaming support for multiple code blue numbers that they may have in their hospital environment. So just giving the ability for us to go and configure more than one number is what was added into CU3 for Skype for Business. Now, there is a PowerShell. This is all driven by PowerShell, by the way. We don't see any updates in the UI for this. So we use this new CS emergency number commandlet. Right? This allows us to go in and define the emergency numbers that we want to use. Now, the next two sections here talk about the set CS location policy, if you have an existing location policy, or you can build a new one. Right? And what happens if I already have them existing, right? I'm already using emergency numbers today, and I want to add more, right? Well, if I use the set CS location policy and I build these new emergency numbers, the values that are specified will take precedence over what was already there. So we'll basically overwrite what was already there. If I don't configure new emergency numbers, meaning I don't use the new CS emergency number commandlet at all, then I'm going to continue using the existing numbers that are there. Right, so you just have to be aware of that when you go to configure this to make sure you know whether you're going to be overwriting numbers, because that's always a bad thing. If you think, oh, I'm just going to add this number to that number, actually, no, it's going to replace that. So if you wanted 999 and 112, make sure that your new CS emergency number commandlet has both 999 and 112. If you just put 112 in there and then you do a new one and say, well, 999, it doesn't add that to 112. It replaces 112. And now you're going, Brian told me this worked. Well, it does when you configure it right. You have to have the correct client versions, latest versions of the client, to be able to do this. If I remember correctly, it was the July, I think it was the July PU.
Yeah, and it is defined in that link under planning details. Again, didn't put those numbers on the slides because they're kind of dynamic and they
tend to shift. But we do need to have the correct version of the client to support the multiple emergency number feature. If you have a version of the client that doesn't support this, they're not out of luck, right? It's not like they can't call the emergency numbers. We'll just fall back to using that singular emergency number that was defined in the policy before, right? So they're dialing a number that matches the dial string, then we don't need a dial match, right? So if I do 911 and the dial string is 911, all is good, right? I don't need any kind of a dial mask. The idea of a dial mask is to be able to take numbers and kind of flip them around. So, hey, he dialed 112, but this location policy is in the US, let's make that actually mask over to 911, right? So the user, if they're traveling, doesn't have to think in an emergency, so I'm from the UK, I usually dial 112, and now I'm in the US and I have to remember to dial 911, right? We don't need to wait that long. Just dial 112, right? And we'll flip that over to 911 and make the outbound call for you, and hopefully life is good. So a couple links there that take you through the planning aspects and the config aspects for multiple emergency numbers, right? Again, this is another feature set that we've driven by customer request and also available only in the Sky for Business server on-premises deployments. It's time for Q&A. We don't have a Q&A slide, do we?
Nope.
So what else we have in here? We got our other fun slides. We can go into that. So let's take a moment to go question answers. If you have any questions, come up to the mic, or if you don't want to get up, just say something. We'll just repeat questions. And anything related to Skype for Business server, anything we talked about today, or if you have any burning Skype for Business server questions, we'll take them too. All the hard questions go to Scott. Yes?
Any plans for better archiving and the ability to archive to the host?
Yes, the question is, are there any better plans for archiving? Right. So the way that it's operating today in the on-premises world, archiving has two options. Right, you can archive to SQL on-premises, and you can archive to Exchange on-premises, right? And then you can have third parties that plug in on top of that, Actience and all that fun stuff, right? In the online world, you have Exchange online, and that's it, right? As it stands right now, that is the archival approach, right? And going forward in the online world, it's always Exchange online. That is the path, right? And there's some talk about, you know, API access and getting folks like Actience to be able to cloud enable their stuff and suck data out and whatnot. That's all things that they're thinking through, but nothing there that we can make official. So. I think there's a question back there. Can you see?
Right here. Right.
Okay, this one here.
So to repeat his question, if you move to hybrid and you move users up online, but your SIP trunks are still hosted in on-prem, is there an issue there? Are you talking about specifically numbers that would have been used out of that SIP trunk in their dial-in conferencing on-prem before?
No, just the ability to do conferencing.
Through cloud PBX, through cloud PSTN conferencing?
Yeah, so I mean the key thing to realize there is the PSTN conferencing services are provided by the environment that you're hosted in. So if you're moved to the cloud, you will consume PSTN conferencing in the cloud. You cannot bring those PSTN numbers through your on-premises SIP trunk. Right? So you'll get that through either the cloud PSTN conferencing service that Microsoft offers or through a third-party ACP like Intercall or BTI or AT&T. Right? You won't be able to bring dial-in conferencing numbers through your on-premises trunks and route them to an online conference. Can't do that.
But you would still be able to use the SIP trunk on-prem through on-prem PSTN connectivity to make outbound calls as a, you know, right side of the conference.
Yep. There is a licensing consideration. The question was, is there a licensing consideration in that model? Yeah, when you move the user to the cloud, they need to have a license assigned to them that permits them to use cloud PSTN conferencing. And that's either a separate add-on SKU or, you know, something you can get as part of, say, the E5 suite. Okay, sure. There was a question back here somewhere. It's really hard to see with the light back there. Question is, what are your plans for supporting SQL 2016? I don't have any comment on that. I know it's not on the current test bed that they're doing this quarter, but I don't have any comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's typically the way that it's worked in past, and I mean, I'm not basing this on anything that I know right now. I'm just saying that typically in the way that it's worked in the past is that we always try and do that catch up after the fact, right? Because SQL 2016 comes out after we do the initial product. So it does, we have to go back and do test cycles on it. So I would assume it's probably in the works already, so just keep your eye out on the channels that you normally would.
Question up front.
Any plans for native call recording? Is that the same third party?
Yeah, so the question is, are there any plans for native call recording? Nothing that we can comment on right now. Sorry. Question in the back. Yeah, so the question, if you have two users that are having, so Scott and I are having an IAM conversation, and then there's a glitch in the matrix, right, and we lose connectivity to each other, will offline IAMs kick in at that point?
I don't think so.
I think they will, because when I'm talking to Scott at that point, he's not technically offline. His present state isn't offline, right, because if he's having a network glitch, he's not necessarily been able to get presence updated to say that he's offline, so I don't know that it would kick in. I honestly can't say that I've... Yeah, so I mean, there's a couple of things that could fall into that. It could be if you have server-side conversation history, which we didn't get a chance to talk about at all here, but if you have server-side conversation history turned on, you wouldn't get the, this message has not been sent kind of thing. It would just basically end up in his missed conversations. That wouldn't be offline IAM. That would be the server-side depositing it on his behalf. That's probably more likely what you'll see rather than the client spooling it and trying to shove it into EWS. Yeah, question, the Survivable Branch appliances, will they support features like server-side conversation history, things of that nature? In the CU3 on a Survivable Branch server, the appliance I can't comment on because that's the vendors that have to get that out there. It works with server-side conversation history. So a user homed on a Survivable Branch appliance with a back-end pool that has the correct patch level, server-side conversation history works. You just need to get CU3 on the SBA, and you need the vendors to...
Go back there, and then we'll go here.
Yeah, I'll go back here. Will mobile clients support offline IAM? I would doubt it. No. Question? So the question was, is there a rumor mill about text messaging coming soon? Don't have any comment on that one.
We don't generally comment on rumors.
Yeah, if it's a rumor... Don't comment on rumors.
It's just not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
Especially when someone's recording.
Yes, definitely not a good idea.
So on a serious note, though, if there are features that you're hearing customers want, absolutely we do want to hear from that. It's skypefeedback.com. You can go to it's a site called User Voice, where there's already pre-canned kind of ideas in there. You can add new ideas. You can vote up existing ideas. So really, that's the place to go to submit that kind of, I want text, SMS text messaging, including the client. Go there, describe who it is that you're working with. And we do actually read that. I know it sounds like maybe we don't, but we do actually take that feedback and pull that in, and it's part of a internal planning process we go through.
Yeah. Question is, what about support for server 2016? Probably in the same boat as what we talked
same
about.
Same boat as SQL, yeah.
With SQL 2016. I would imagine it's coming. It's just, I don't know what the test schedule is for that. So, but being that server 2016, didn't that just release? So I would expect it a little bit out because we're generally not Johnny on the spot with that, like the day that it releases. So.
Yeah, it takes.
But yeah, I would imagine that's on the team's radar just like SQL 2016 is. I can't give a date.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, generally, in the past, based on how we've done it, it's that leapfrog effect is generally within a year. But again, I wouldn't want to comment. I mean, no one's going to go back and redeploy existing deployments, right? So it's literally just the net new ones. But even that, a lot of times takes most G8 on Monday. They're not ready to go. They don't have images baked and all that. So even the customer request for it. Yes, it's an interesting question, but most customers probably aren't ready to start deploying server bits on 2016 for at least a couple of months anyways. Yeah. Yeah. It also depends on the agility of your customer, right? If your customer is agile enough to start saying, hey, you know, it's been a month since it's out and I'm ready to go and I bake my images, then yeah, it's you're kind of in that rock and a hard place.
Yeah, so this the question was around the mobile client and dialing 911. Let's take that offline and see, because there's been so many iterations of the mobile client, I don't even know what's working and what's not. So I don't want to comment on that. So there's a question over here, and then we'll take one more, and we gotta clear out. Yeah. Yeah, so the question was around version numbers. I mean, as it stands right now, Skype for Business Server 2015, the version builds change as we do CUs, right? There is planning going on for vNext, right? And that likely will have a different version number. It won't be 2015 because it's not 2015 anymore. So yeah, it'll. I don't know that it would ever get synced up with the client, right? Because the Office client moves at a much more rapid pace. So you may end up with, you know, Office 2016 and then vNext, right, and then Office 2017 or 28 or whatever the heck they call you. Yeah, so I don't know that that would ever get mapped there. So.
But yeah, no firm plans either way.
Yeah. So we need to wrap up because we're done with the recording. But we'll stick around for any other questions you have. Thanks, guys. Hope you had a great session.